Episode 8, Breaking New Ground.
If you've ever been shot at in Sicily, dined a derp by the water's edge on the sun-drenched Isle of Capri, done business on the strangest of Italian towns, been banged up in Rome's infamous jail, wept at a much-loved matriarch's funeral, and been marched out of St. Peter's by the Swiss Guard. If you've ever savored the brilliance and diversity of Italian cuisine, been overwhelmed by their art and architecture, sold 10,000 rugby shirts to Italian fashion houses, and finally, grammatically escaped from using the infinitive and arrived at the conditional, then there is most certainly an intriguing tale to be told.
The world is shocked to hear that Elvis Presley has died from a heart attack, aged 42. Queen Elizabeth II's Silver Jubilee celebrations are in full swing, with street parties and dedicated events taking place all around the UK. George Lucas's Star Wars opens in cinemas to record-breaking audiences, and the first Apple II computers go on sale. Rioting breaks out at the Notting Hill Carnival in London, England.
J.R.H. will now endeavour to explain some of my, shall we say, enthusiastic marketing exploits.
The sports goods import business was really progressing. We had done a stalwart job in increasing sales of rugby shirts and full strips to the myriad clubs around the country, along with balls. Even the Mitre soccer ball was sold in their hundreds to Inter Milan, AC Milan and Juventus as they wanted to prepare for their visits to the UK in European competition. The beauty of selling rugby shirts direct to teams was there was virtually no domestic competition. We could cut out the retailer and make bigger margins, and depending on annual club budgets, there was recurring revenue. However, something was bothering Ian. Looking at US publications such as People magazine, Playboy and others, there were all of these full-page, incredibly expensive adverts from Marlboro Cigarettes, the Marlboro Man. It was a strategic advertising campaign by the American Tobacco Corporation. Smoking their brand, you could be at home in your own universe and master of your own destiny. Their images initially featured rugged men portrayed in a variety of roles, but later primarily featuring a cowboy in picturesque wild terrain. On Ian's trip to America, he had seen their new campaign. It was a man on a horse, a wrangler, weathered skin, and guess what? He was wearing a rugby shirt. No doubt about it. Ian's mind flips into overdrive. To an extent, our friends, these Italians playing rugby, were an elitist group playing an elitist sport who had nothing more than the name rugby printed on their kit bag to convey their sporting prestige. It seemed to him that fashion and rugby had a potential convergence. Having seen the occasional Italian girl wearing her boyfriend's old rugby shirt with blue jeans, convinced Ian there was a retail opportunity. And where was Ian based? In one of the homes of Italian fashion, Florence. OK, so here we are back to the old days of our wine exporting business, with all the things that most people hate, especially cold calling. Deep breath. Here we go again, and into the heartland of the Florentine boutiques he ventures. Now, if he had a blouse in a different colour or a cashmere sweater, he would probably have been politely dismissed as being run-of-the-mill. But arriving with an absolutely new product and speaking in an Anglo-Romano-Fiorentino accent, it seemingly caught the attention of the owner of the most important fashion store in Florence. Their internal discussions seemed to go on and on, but after what seems like an eternity, they order 800 shirts on the basis that we do not sell to anyone else in Florence. Wow, even though the margins are now much lower, this is a big order and justifies Ian's instincts. In the ordering schedule, there are lots of obvious colour combinations. Navy and sky blue, claret and sky. But the one order that we just can't get our heads around is the Richmond Rugby Club colours of yellow, red and black hoops. We think this is the one selection that will lay an egg with the Fiorentino clientele. Anyway, with the help of friends, we deliver their order to this top Florentine boutique, early evening on a Friday. Apparently, l'Americana cycles to her job the next day, Saturday, and at about 11 o'clock, she calls in and says, "I've just seen three Richmond shirts whiz past me on Motorino's on Lungarno." Ian now hits the centre quickly and finds that one of the old boys' rugby shirts, I wish we could remember which, is now starring on the streets as well. How in God's name did this happen? Within hours and without advertising, the Italians had launched a new look with only a single shop window display. Richmond, one of the ugliest combos, is for some strange reason hitting the indefinable Italian sweet spot. The answer is, of course, that the store owners know their audience better than we do. Overall, though, we had an angle. No, we didn't. We had an instinct. Continuing with our newfound marketing plan, Ian then sold a small order to a Fiorucci outlet. Fiorucci is a global fashion label, famous for blue jeans, T-shirts and other stuff, and it is a very big player. On the back of the trial order, they request a meeting at their Milan headquarters. It's a timely encounter, as Kit and Ian are driving back to the UK for a short summer holiday and can easily divert to Milan on the way. Milan has a different feel to it than Rome or Florence. It feels more of a northern European city, but it is not without typical Italian charm either. In a very modern, high-rise business sector, complete with our array of samples, we meet the Fiorucci people. No real selling seemed necessary, although Ian did, naturally, reaffirm the success of the well-known Florence boutique. And then they brought out their order pad. I gather Ian didn't dare look at l'Americana in case they uncontrollably punched the air, did a high five, and jigged around the marketing director's desk. With all the contrived, phlegmatic reaction of a true stiff upper lip Englishman, Ian glanced at the order with feigned world weariness. Yep, just a typical day in the business world for Romaric SRL. The order was for 10,000 shirts. Leaving the elevator on the ground floor, Ian almost sank to his knees, as if scoring the winning goal at the San Siro Stadium just down the road. Instead of having teammates jump all over him, he has an ashen-faced Kit hanging on to the lobby wall. 10,000 shirts, she screams. It's all a bit too much to take in. So, with a bag of samples under his arm and with his buttocks visibly clenched, he sashays John Wayne style to the bar across the road. After news like this, what better place to go and celebrate than Monte Carlo? It was anyway on their planned route back to the UK, and where they had already booked a modest hotel. Nevertheless, on the drive from Milan, he couldn't stop himself from imagining all different types of future scenarios. Not least of them was that his rather well-used Alfa Romeo GT Junior might just be in line for a Lamborghini replacement. This is dangerous territory. He knows and needs to rein back. Notwithstanding, they dress up and go to the casino and do what all big spenders do. They put 10 francs on red at the roulette table. Back in England, no time is wasted, and Ian is in a meeting with Bert Moores, the delightful managing director of Halbro, our shirt manufacturer in Bolton. "What? 10,000 shirts," he exclaims. "In 3 months? He takes his glasses off and puts them on the table whilst wiping his forehead with his hand and turns and says, I can do you 300. With their regular customers all fast-tracked and with existing pre-orders, there wasn't the capacity to fulfil the Fiorucci order, never mind with only 3 months' lead time. It's hard to explain what this moment would be like as he looked out of the window behind Bert's desk. The dark Lancashire sky was pissing down all over this already cold July day, and the Lamborghini was out of the window. All was not lost, and Ian is back in Prato trying desperately to find a manufacturer to make a makeshift version of the original rugby shirt, without the reinforced sections superfluous to a fashion item. If Prato can't do it, then no one can. Looking at the order again, we notice for the first time that there is a cancellation clause for within 14 days of the meeting in Milan. Well, sure enough, Fiorucci sent us a telex confirming the cancellation of the order. What is worse is that within a couple of months, they flood their outlets with a lightweight cotton version of our originals in pretty much the same colour combinations they had ordered from us. Probably just a coincidence. Ian had a wonderful cricket sweater, loose-knit cable with club colours of pink and light blue in the form of a V-neck. Now, in Italy, they don't have looms that could provide this type of loose cable knit. They could do a tighter version that tennis players would wear, but not this classic, laid-back English cricket look. L'Americana would get loads of compliments when she wore it with jeans and no shirt. Italians would come up to her and inspect the beautiful wool and loose cabling. They loved the pink and light blue colours too, and the identification with counties or clubs. It was different, unique and unisex. So here we go again. Fabio Gori, a friend from Prato, is knocked out by the idea of English cricket sweaters as a fashion item. He runs a very large fashion wholesaling business in Prato, just a part of their family empire. And whilst the sweaters are not cheap, he says he will buy a trial run of 3,000 units. We really don't want to string this out, as it's too painful even now. But having targeted the main producers with this machinery in the UK, primarily in Surrey in the Godalming area, they could barely produce enough to cover demand from their long-standing customers from counties, clubs and schools throughout Britain. For fear of branding ourselves as perennial losers, Ian is no doubt reluctant to tell you how we sold a job lot, a full container load of leftover acrylic sweaters from a Prato factory to an East End dealer in bankrupt stock, who specialised in end-of-line buying. There should have been a decent commission, but unfortunately, when he opened the container, the importer was rather perturbed to find sleeves of irregular length and colour. The letter of credit, invented in Prato, ended up being contested in the courts. In contrast, the sports goods importing business was doing rather well, and we were getting national exposure by taking stands at all the major trade exhibitions. We are still retailing rugby shirts through our existing outlets, but Ian is still looking for the big kill as a fashion item. What we do know is that Italian rugby players in general are very proud that they play rugby. We know that they cannot easily get individual shirts, apart from their team strips, which are fundamentally the club's property. We know that if they wear a shirt casually with blue jeans, for example, it will make people identify that they are part of a special upmarket sport. With all of this conveyed by a simple fashion statement. So, just to colour the background a little. Italy in the 1970s has a rubbish postal system. Quite frankly, you might be more justified in trusting a carrier pigeon rather than the Poste Italiane. Moving slightly sideways, another factor of Italian life is that they can get bogged down in administration and bureaucracy. For example, in England, if you joined a rugby club, you might pay your subs, and the club might know your details, address, etc. But that would be it. In Italy, you need a tessera, a registration card with the Italian Rugby Federation officially licensing you as a player. And that involved a whole heap of form filling, with all the national data being kept in one central headquarters. Big Brother is watching you. Now these two factors, as irritating as they may be, combine to create an opportunity, but it's a risky one. Approaching the Federation, we discover that they have a current list of all the names and addresses of registered rugby players in Italy, maybe 8,000 in total, and we can buy the list. Now, mail order in Italy is not in the sophisticated stage of development as it is in America or even the UK. Nevertheless, they do have bulk mailing service providers to help enable this idea. We pick two rugby shirt designs. Cardiff, navy and light blue hoops, perfect to accompany blue jeans. And the Barbarians, broad black and white hoops, one of the most famous and well-known team colours identified by Italian rugbisti. We make a mail order offer with pictures of the two shirts, along with a folksy letter from none other than me, or should I say Rick, as I am now widely known in Italy. Ian has been trying to convince me that I have a high profile in the Italian game, and he is attempting to connect me with the recipient in the spirit of rugby. Oh, and a little bit of fashion, and oh, just what a great investment it'll be. Most direct mail companies will tell you that one half of 1%, 0.05%, would be considered a good response. Clearly, they will aim to build on that by repeat orders and follow-ups. Now, we're in Italy, and we are concerned not so much about the mail-out, but more whether the potential purchaser will have faith in such a flawed postal system. And bear in mind that in this era, there are no credit card options, so we are only able to deal in cheques and postal orders. We mail out in batches, and within days my mailbox in Via dei Bardi is stuffed to the brim with postal orders, cheques and even cash. It just shows you the faith the rugby faction in Italy would have for a fellow colleague from their special world. It appears, for some reason, that apparently Rick could be trusted. Apart from processing postal orders and packaging shirts for dispatch from our apartment, we had marketed the shirts under the MITRE logo, and now L'Americana was having to steam iron MITRE logos onto every shirt. I know you want to know the numbers, so if you take into account repeat sales and the relatively short time lapse, we hit an incredible 8% response. Unheard of in mail order circles.
Italia 77 was devised, written and introduced by me, Ian McAllister, and read by Richard Greenwood, who also contributed to the writing. It was recorded and produced by Tom Allam and Nigel Heath at La Cucina Studios, London, and edited by Stu Smith, Nigel Heath and Jamie Allen. If you've enjoyed the show, please hit the like button, subscribe and consider leaving a review. Italia 77 is a Zacuti production.